And greetings. Happy Tuesday. Welcome to the Steve Dace Show here live and on demand on Blaze TV, radio, and podcast. Alongside Todd Erzin and Aaron McIntyre, I'm Steve Dace. And today's show, as well as every day's show these days, headline brought to you by our friends over at First Cup Coffee Company, the patriotic, pro-American coffee company. But that's not why we promote them. If their coffee sucked, we wouldn't. I'm not going to tell you, hey, go buy a product because the guy or the gal, the acknowledged binary being agrees with us. No, that's not the way that this works. I believe in meritocracy. Do a good product. And then if you agree with us and are trying to build the same parallel economy that we are, then we're all in. And that's why we're all in on First Cup Coffee Company. There's a flavor for every freedom-loving American. They strive to be the freshest you'll find. They put the roast date right there. They ship within days of being roasted. Go to firstcup.com. Use the code DACE to get 10% off at firstcup.com. Promo code DACE. And if you subscribe, you'll get an additional 10% off for the life of your order at firstcup.com. Use the promo code DACE. Got to say thank you again. We continue. I just looked. We are in the top 500 still on Amazon.com with this little children's book. I got cool thing yesterday. Went into my favorite city in Iowa, Pella Christian. And they had me at the elementary school there read the book to about 30, 40 kindergartners, you know. It was a really cool experience. I've never done that before. And I kept wanting to read Elf's book in my mind. I kept wanting to say, every time I turned a page, I kept wanting to say, and then I went through the candy cane forest. Okay. I had to put my focus back on my own book. But they were a great audience. They thanked us with way too much of a bounty from the best bakery in America. Yarzma's Bakery there in Pella, Iowa is. It's up there with the best bakeries in America. Now, you saw I brought the bounty in this morning.
Oh, I tasted the bounty, and I don't have much of a sweet tooth. No, but that blueberry muffin was money.
Right as you were about to bite in, I said, now, the first time you take a bite, you're going to look at me and say, is this for real? And before I could, as I was just saying it, you took your first bite, and you looked at me and with the look like, is this real? Yeah. It's Iowa, brother. I mean, Yarzma's is legit. All right. So way too many carbs. I did get a piece, but brought the rest in so that I would not gorge on that as I'm trying to lose about 40 pounds this year. I'm down about 14, so 26 more to go.
You could tell, by the way.
Oh, can you? Oh, yeah. Well, thank you. I appreciate that. Yesterday, I wore a shirt that was way too big for me. I realized that after I got on the air.
Photo of you with Autumn, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. So it's amazing. You know, you forget this after you lose the first 100 pounds, how it went, and you wait 10 years to try to lose the last 40, and you're like, huh, you mean if I eat less, I'll lose weight? Weird. But you got to get yourself in that mindset. And so I'm in that mindset. After turning 50, I'm in that mindset now. All right. So we're working on that. So thank you guys for the kind words. I appreciate it. But had a great time reading Why Easter to These Kids yesterday. I've done two pieces of external marketing for this book. Todd Starnes had me on his show, or fill in for Todd Starnes had me on his show, and I was supposed to be on for 15 minutes, but our overtime ran long on Friday, so only got on for five. And then one of our listeners here was sweet enough to invite me on her podcast, and I mean, I have no idea how big of an audience she is. I just thought it was very sweet that she asked, and I had free time, so I'm like, yeah, okay, I'd be happy to do it. That's it. That's absolutely it. I mean, there's been no other external marketing for this book at all. I mean, this has just been you guys here in this audience. And just very, very thankful. And I hope the message resonates. I said to one of the little kids yesterday who correctly rose his hand and correctly answered what Easter is. And I told him, now you go home tonight and you tell your parents, I already know the most important thing to know in the universe. I'm good. I'm already getting into grandparent mode. Stoke and provoke the little kids, then send them home to their parents.
What did you do, Deborah?
Yes. So some little kid went home last night, went full kindergarten cop. Okay. Teacher said, I already know everything. Right? You know, so Shout out to you if you're that parent there in Pella, Iowa. I got you. So that was a ton of fun. Leave us a review at Amazon if you like the book. And a lot of you have. We have been getting a ton of email or a ton of reviews here in the last few days. So thank you for all of those. You can get your copy at Amazon.com. Why Easter Jesus Died for Us So We Can Live Forever. I think there might even still be a couple of signed copies left. I've not gotten an update on this. That's why I haven't mentioned it, because I don't want to send you guys there and then they're out. But just in case I don't, you know, maybe there's still some signed. Why Easter is where you can go to get autographed copies if you want there, including customized autographs as well at signedwhyeaster.com. Also, and this is going to come up, of course, in the montage, a reminder, we had Todd, it's Bensman, right, from the Center for Immigration Studies. He's in this episode. It's the third episode of our series on basically Texas versus the feds. I'm sure this is going to be featured in Aaron's montage here in a moment. I am at the stage, we'll get into this after the montage. I'm just blackpilled on the whole issue after what's gone down the last 24 hours. Just totally blackpilled. And this episode, by the way, set the stage for that. There is a moment in this episode when you find out that the Biden administration did actually act to have Mexico turn one particular wave of illegal migrants away. And then because, I mean, the obvious logical conclusion of that is, why don't they do this with every wave then? You know what I'm saying? Or at least can we do at least? How much for two waves? You know, can we gamble here? Can we get maybe half the waves? Okay. But if you want to watch this special, blazeoriginals.com is where you can go. Use the code Border Crisis to get $30 off your Blaze TV subscription. Code Border Crisis at blazeoriginals.com. That's blazeoriginals.com. All right. And with that, here is Aaron's aforementioned rundown of what happened while we were away.
What happened while we were away, brought to you by breaking news. A secular judge thinks the government is God. I'm talking about Ketanji Brown Jackson, a U.S. Supreme Court justice, during arguments over an injunction placed on the federal government by a lower court in the Missouri v. Biden lawsuit that disallows government officials from using their contacts at social media companies to suppress American speech. The Biden administration appealed that lower court's injunction, which is why it was in front of the Supreme Court yesterday. Anyway, here's Ketanji Brown Jackson on the First Amendment.
Biggest concern is that your view has the First Amendment hamstringing the government in significant ways in the most important time periods. I mean, what would you have the government do? I've heard you say a couple times that the government can post its own speech, but in my hypothetical, you know, kids, this is not safe, don't do it, is not going to get it done. And so I guess some might say that the government actually has a duty to take steps to protect the citizens of this country. And you seem to be suggesting that that duty cannot manifest itself in the government encouraging or even pressuring platforms to take down harmful information. So can you help me? Because I'm really worried about that, because you've got the First Amendment operating in an environment of threatening circumstances from the government's perspective, and you're saying that the government can't interact with the source of those problems.
In other news, also at the Supreme Court, they ruled yesterday and indefinitely blocked Texas from enforcing an immigration law that would allow state officials to arrest and detain people they suspect of entering the country illegally. The so-called administrative stay will remain in place while the court considers emergency appeals from the Biden administration and others who want the justices to block enforcement of the law while their legal challenges play out. Way past time for Texas and other states to band together and defy these courts. Case in point, a federal judge has ruled that illegals can possess firearms. U.S. District Court Judge Sharon Coleman of the Northern District of Illinois referenced lower court rulings in dismissing firearm possession charges against Heriberto Carballo Flores, who was illegally or unlawfully in the United States when he possessed a handgun in the Little Village neighborhood of Chicago on June 1st back in 2020. The father of murdered Georgia nursing student Lakin Riley spoke to the Today Show yesterday.
Do you think a difference in immigration policy would have made a difference for Lakin?
We have no idea if that would have changed anything, but he's here illegally, that he might not have been here had we had secure borders.
Checking in on Yeezy.
Are you in that space where you're comfortable enough to say, this is where I am right now? I'm still a man of God. Jesus still is king, but this is vultures right now. This is where I am.
It is, but I have my issues with Jesus. There's a lot of stuff I went through that I prayed and I ain't see Jesus show up. So
how did you not so-called disappear? Like, cause that's a hell of a fight.
Cause I'm God. And anyone to disagree, I'm the God of me.
A newly resurfaced video from 2022 of one Barack Obama speaking at Stanford is going viral this morning, talking about the COVID jabs.
And yet, despite the fact that we've now essentially clinically tested the vaccine on billions of people worldwide.
And finally, meet a real man. This is Kansas City Chiefs kicker Harrison Butker speaking with EWTN.
I do want to ask, there is a debate in this country over the best way to curb gun violence after being so close to it.
Yeah.
Any thoughts?
Yeah. I had to do a lot of thinking about what took place at the parade. I know gun violence was a big discussion, but at the end of the day, this is degenerate violence and it should not be occurring. I think we need strong fathers in the home. I think we need men that are leading, that are setting good examples, that are teaching the young men in our society that violence is not the way to handle our disputes. It's very unfortunate what happened. Unfortunately, many, many children were injured. A beautiful young lady was killed over someone getting offended and turning to violence to handle that dispute. It's so sad. I don't think guns are the issue. I think we need fathers in the home that are being great examples for our youth.
What do you think are some specific challenges men face today that could be keeping them from their potential?
I think part of the fall from the first sin of Adam and Eve is men want to be like women and women want to be like men. You see a lot of times where women want to be leading the marriage and they want to be the head of the household, and the man, you know, it's the Homer Simpson, sit on the couch, drink beer and just watch TV and just let everything go on around me, and I'm not really at the center of what's even going on in my household. So, you know, I'm very passionate about encouraging men to be courageous, to not be afraid to be the leader. It's something that we struggle with, I think, a lot of times to go outside of our comfort zone and to say, you know what, God has called me to be a leader and to lead by example. I'm going to lead my household and I'm going to lead outside the world when I'm evangelizing. So that's something that I'm very passionate about. And I think more men need to not care about what the world says about them. They need to have strong men that support them with iron sharpening iron. And they need to be encouraged that Jesus Christ was radical. And he said a lot of things that weren't liked and he wasn't loved. But at the end of the day, he stood for truth. And I think men cannot be afraid and cannot waver, and they need to stand for truth.
And that's what happened while we were away.
Aaron, thank you for including that at the end. I think that was necessary to see. And just for me personally, I think that was a good note to end that montage on, because we're going to talk about maybe the most important issue in the country right now. And I have gotten completely blackpilled on it. So it's important to see. There are still 7,000 men in Israel who have not taken the knee to Baal yet. There is the fight is there are people fighting. It just may not be in the places that we're accustomed to, or that we are privy to, or that are the traditional venues for doing so. And that's another reason why I think right now I want to talk about our friends over at Preborn, because this is another place where your relationship with us here on The Blaze, and a lot of times it feels like, man, they're either not going to count my vote, or my vote's not going to count, if you know what I'm saying. Right? I mean, at this point, I'm voting for orange cones and speed bumps. I'm not even doing this out of any sense of hope. I really just want things to be slowed down enough that my kids and grandkids have a chance for whatever time we have left to experience the American dream. Any of this sound familiar at all?
A bit.
Well, one place where we are affirmatively taking ground, where we're on offense, is with this relationship we have with Preborn. And it's helped to save the lives of tens of thousands of babies since we partnered with them to help them fund their mission of both truth and grace. They confront moms that are thinking of killing and murdering their children with the truth that they are a mom, and that is not an unviable tissue mass or a blob. That is another person. That's a separate heartbeat. But then they offer grace to the moms who choose life, who walk into the light. They know that they did not dance with the darkness, because in most cases they're fulfilled, well-adjusted, in a secure relationship, but because they're not. So they're there with the grace as well, whether that's prenatal care, postnatal care, all of this stuff, the ultrasounds, all of it, right down to the car seats. All of it for the mom and the baby is free, provided they've got tax-deductible donation and funding from people like us. If you'd like to make one, few better causes you'll ever sign up for than this. Go to preborn.com/Steve. That's preborn.com/Steve, or dial #250 and say the keyword baby on your mobile phone. I want to share with you guys just why I'm just black-pilled over the last 24 hours on the immigration issue. We have unquestionably our second best Supreme Court justice issuing an extended injunction against Texas, Samuel Alito. And I'm not saying it never happens. It's just very rare for the court to stop something from being enforced and then come back and say, yeah, actually, it's a great idea. Like, think back to the Dobbs decision. The first sign that they were at least going to uphold the 15-week ban. Now, I think if you go back and listen to our shows at the time, I don't know that any of us thought they were going to use this as an impetus to overturn Roe v. Wade completely. But the first sign that they were at least going to uphold that 15-week ban is they allowed it to be enforced and others like it to go into place. I'm not saying it never happens, but in general, if your odds are low when they put an injunction against something, that they're then going to come back and say, after reconsidering, all clear. Not saying it never happens, right? Like, are there people who have before taken their last paycheck, gone to Vegas, bet it all on 7, bet it all on black in order to get out of debt? And it landed. Has that ever happened like once or twice?
Sure.
Should you really, are those really the odds you should be playing with your income, with your productivity? No. Okay. So, I mean, it can happen, but has happened, I'm sure. But that's not a path to victory, typically. That's not something to count on. And one of the things I struggle with a lot in this job, and always have, is I don't want to mislead you. Bearing false witness is not necessarily the same as lying. Most of the time it is, but when Rahab said she didn't know where those Jews were to the Canaanites, was she telling the truth?
No.
No. When Corey Ten Boom told the Nazis she didn't know where those Jews were, was she telling the truth?
No. The hierarchy of truth.
Right. Because the value of life comes before in the hierarchy of values. Correct. So most of the time, the vast majority of the time, overwhelming amount, like maybe over 80, maybe 90% of the time, would lying be the definition of bearing false witness? Yeah. But it's not 100%. There's many forms. One of the ways that I have struggled with it in this job is that there can absolutely be a tension between what will draw traffic and what will draw listeners and attract eyeballs and what is actually true. And that tension really for me is because I can't sit here and say my prime directive is a biblical worldview and then feed you a bunch of nonsense, low-lying fruit that fills my belly and lines my pockets, but in the end, it's full of sound and fury signifying nothing. We didn't accomplish anything. And so this is the challenge, and I'm not a victim. I signed up for this. I agreed to this. I mean, if you sign up to be a cop in Chicago, you agree to get shot at on a regular basis, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's, you know, you're not a victim. You signed up for it. That's the job. I mean, what's the line in the Mission Impossible job when Angela Bassett's Mission Impossible movie, when Angela Bassett says to Alec Baldwin, Alec Baldwin says to Angela Bassett, well, if they would have done what you said, they all would have died. And she says, yeah, I know. That's the job. I mean, that's the job. For me, this job, that's not the same for a bunch of other people in this industry who are good folks and have other prime directives guiding them. But for me, if the advancement of a biblical worldview is my prime directive, there is going to consistently be tension between how do I broadcast while remaining on a narrow road? And we have to navigate that all the time. And so there are certainly moments where there are things we don't discuss that either are coming from a dishonest place, or in the case of the whole bloodbath thing, they're just empty calories. They're not bad. It's not dishonest. I mean, the Doritos you got at Vendoland taste good, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah. But ultimately, you know, those are empty calories. They don't satiate. They don't satisfy. And that's so, you know, they're here today, gone tomorrow. We would much rather serve you steak than Cheez-Its. And this immigration issue should be, man, a porterhouse. Wagyu beef. Like someone got on a horse. Okay. And a trolley got on a steamship from Japan. All right. With the Wagyu. At Wagyu and dropped it off level of 100% right off the grill red meat. This issue should be, right? We're only talking about the sovereignty of our country. The importing of how many criminal elements. The handing over of our border to drug traffickers and human traffickers. The importing of your replacements, our replacements. These are significant. I mean, short of a depression or an army dropping either a bomb or a brigade on our soil, can there be anything more immediately existential to a country than its own sovereignty? I don't think so.
And one would think.
I mean, it's certainly on the list with those other two things I just mentioned, right?
Yes.
And you know why those other two things are there? When a country drops a bomb on you or a brigade on you, they're attacking what? Your sovereignty. When your economy is destabilized to the point that the people can no longer be supported, that also is an attack against your sovereignty as a people. And we sat here on this show a couple of weeks ago telling you what an important moment this was with what the governor of Texas is bound to do and has to do against the... We did this show just a few weeks ago.
Sure.
Right. And now it's just like we've all moved on. Oh, well, the court said we couldn't do it. It's not that important. Just keep raping and killing people and let the Democrats bring more voters in and... Hope that's not your suburban boy that overdoses on fentanyl next week. Hope that's not your suburban daughter that you turn on the internet to get your jollies. And you're like, oh, wait, that's my kid they kidnapped and human trafficked. Hope that's not you. Anyway, did you see what Joe Scarborough said yesterday? I mean, doesn't that just seem like what's going on right now?
Yes.
And I got to tell you, I emotionally don't know how to handle it. I'm just completely black-pilled. If this is not just a stop everything else we're doing, literally everything else we're doing, stop it. Everything stops. This time 4 years ago, we stopped everything for a scam. How about 15 days to flatten the border? 30 days to slow the invasion? Can we try that?
This is an alpha and omega point you're making.
But we're just going to go on.
We are.
We're going to go on yakety yaks with the back and forth for my engagement farming with Joe Scarborough and whatever stupid crap he said. We'll just go on and do that. By the way, yesterday the Supreme Court also told that Indiana family who had their kid taken away from them, no soup for you. We don't have time for you. We don't. We got time to tell Texas no, but we've got nothing for you. So good luck with your kid, man. Appreciate it. Peace out. It feels to me like, to discuss like anything else at this moment, I'm lying to you. I'm bearing false witness. I'm deceiving you. That's what it seems like to me. Like, this should be a stop everything. This can't happen. Texas governor's like, well, you know, we'll arrest people for criminal trespass and do what with them? Are you going to deport them? By the way, the first word of illegal alien is what?
Illegal.
Which means they're all guilty of a crime.
Yeah.
You don't wait for them to commit a crime. They're all guilty. They committed a crime already. They're all guilty. But in a way, I can't blame his limp-wristed response. I mean, how many people other than the usual suspects, the Daniel Horowitzes and a few others, are out there right now demanding Greg Abbott do something in defiance of the court? How many people in our business are doing that? The trucker convoy, you see it in the Blaze original, went down to the border. Hey, bros, drive north to Austin. Go to Austin instead. Go where the decisions are actually being made. Go blockade Austin. I know the photo op is at the border. I get that. But the battle is in Austin. Go there. Head up north, about 8 hours, to Austin. Go there. That's where the battle's at. I mean, why don't we just go ahead? Let's just prepare a national tombstone at Arlington, and we can inscribe on it. The Supreme Court told us we had to just sit here and do nothing and take it. You know, sorry, kids. But 9 unelected people told us that we just had to let ourselves be invaded by drug mules, human traffickers, murderers, liars, thieves, rapists, and people that, even if they're not any of those things, will make sure that your wages per capita are the lowest they can possibly be in a market economy by driving them down. But there's nothing we can do. Our hands are tied. You know, I mean, you know, bundle up. The Haitian cannibals are coming. I mean, there's nothing we can do. And there's like no critical mass. There's like no outrage. I've begun. It's clear the critical mass isn't coming. It's just very clear it's not. And maybe it always had to be like this, but the amount of suffering that we're going to have to endure to do anything about this stuff substantively, man, I don't want to live through or contemplate. I just want to go snuggle with Autumn and watch NCAA basketball. Because here's the thing. It doesn't, like Daniel says all the time, it doesn't have to be like this. We don't have to force God's hand to the point that we literally have to be on the brink of total collapse before we'll do something. But by golly, that's just who we are as a species. Sons of Adam and daughters of Eve. Just playing out Genesis 3 over and over again. That's what Harrison Butker was talking about in that clip. Just playing that out over and over again. Epoch after epoch. Millennia after millennia. Era after era. That's the Eras Tour right there. That's the Eras Tour. We just play out Genesis 3 over and over again. Doesn't matter time, custom, language, people. We're just those archetypes over and over and over again. And so I feel like to discuss this in some way, Chuckle Hut, I'm bearing false witness to you. This isn't real. We're not real. Much of the business here, the relationship that the content provider and the consumer has, not real. We just want talking points to feed you, and that's all you want to be fed. Look at the polls. Look at the red wave. That's all you want. And that's all we want to give. And that's all we ever get. So, that's all I got on this. Nothing else. More in a moment.
One of the best measures of how corrupt a country is how rich its leaders get while they're in office. They're not so good at passing laws or governing, but they're great at investing.
Imagine if every American could make money off of war.
In 103 days, that position ends up gaining around 103%. So she made, you know, $2 million plus her original two, so $4
million. I signed, co-sponsored a bill and made too much voluminous flair over it that I wouldn't be seated. So I shut up. The threats that fly around are just absolutely insane.
The Blaze Originals team traveled to Washington, D.C., home to one of the most brilliant financial minds in the world, Nancy Pelosi. In our documentary, Bought and Paid For, How Politicians Get Filthy Rich, we spoke to reps Matt Gaetz and Chip Roy, George Santos, and the bane of D.C. elites, Unusual Whales, to expose how our elected officials are beating the stock market and, more importantly, what we can do. To watch today, go to congressgetsrich.com and use code RICH to get $30 off an annual subscription to Blaze TV.
The things we hope to build our future around are the things worth protecting. Making an estate plan right now means gaining security for your assets and peace of mind for you and your loved ones. You can do that with Trust and Will. You can create and manage a custom estate plan starting at just $199. Go to trustandwill.com/dace. That's trustandwill.com/dace for 10% off plus free document shipping. We recently updated ours earlier this year. Maybe it was late last year when Trust and Will came on board. Amy went through the process and absolutely raved about it. And it's there's a lot of customization that can go on here too. So it's not just, you know, one template fits all, but for your particular situation. That's why they've got an overall rating of excellent and thousands of five-star reviews on Trustpilot, used by hundreds of thousands of families, including ours and counting. So secure your assets and protect your loved ones with Trust and Will. Get 10% off plus free shipping of your estate planning documents by visiting trustandwill.com/dace. That's trustandwill.com/dace. That's 10% off and free shipping at trustandwill.com/dace. Hey, coming up later today in the overtime, we're going to discuss more in depth that Kanye West clip. You know, we could not just drop that in the montage and not have a conversation about that. So we will do that later today on the overtime for Blaze TV subscribers at blazetv.com/dace. Go there to become a subscriber today. Or that's also if you're already a subscriber, well, you'll be able to watch it later today at blazetv.com/dace. All right. So, gentlemen, I was kvetching and we ran out of time in the last segment. We've actually got a few minutes here. I want to get you guys' reaction to what we are told is the existential issue of this moment. And I agree that it is, but it's just like, oh, well, okay, well, I guess we're all just going to fund this. We're going to, you know, we're not going to ask Republicans to stop funding this at the federal level. We're not going to ask a Republican governor to, govern according to the elected sovereignty on behalf of the people who voted for him, as opposed to be the steward of 9 unelected justices. And we're just going to let the invasion go on. And I guess we'll crack back at Keith Olbermann and Joe Scarborough today for mammary glands and giggles. We're just going to do that instead. Aaron, I'll let you go first. Your thoughts.
Man, I agree with your assessment that there is basically no movement. But I mean, we are privy to some of the trends in terms of publishing in right wing. And I'm not going to get into that specifically. Not great right now, despite Y Easter's success. But overall, not great. And that is indicative of a populace of people who are or have been checked out or tapped out, in my estimation. And so while I agree with your assessment, I'm asking to what end do we shout from the rooftops? To what end? The fact of the matter is that there are a lot of people like me who feel stuck. What is the solution? What do we do? To which the response is, well, that's why Joe Biden can't stay in office. And by all means, I don't want him to stay in office. But you're asking me to find the solution in a man who deported 33% fewer, actually more than 33% fewer illegals than Barack Obama did. That's a fact across every metric. That's the solution there. A person with a worse track record of deportations than Barack Obama. That's your solution? The reason why we're in this position is that there are too many Homer Simpsons a la Chiefs kicker Harrison Butker. There are too many Homer Simpsons who are eagerly counting down the minutes and seconds until two meaningless play-in games tonight at the beginning of the NCAA tournament. There are more people like that than know who Lakin Riley is.
Yep.
And know what happened to her and why it happened.
Yep.
That's why we're in this position.
Correct.
So I'm back at a position of being stuck. Because on the one hand, the solution we're being told has a worse record at deportations than Barack Obama. And on the other hand, there are few people who actually give a runny turd about the problem to begin with. So I feel like we're tilting at windmills here. It's not fun. It's not a uplifting and encouraging with a message of hope message, but that's just the reality as I see it. Tell me I'm wrong.
You're not wrong. And there's going to be people that hear this and they're going to say, what, you guys don't think Trump would do a better job than Biden? I'll just speak for myself. I think he'd do a lot better job, despite all the issues and criticisms I have. But what I at given times, but what I hear you say, Aaron, is this idea that that's all we're going to do. That's really what we're, that's all we're going to do. We're just going to vote. That's all we're going to do.
Vote harder.
We're just going to vote harder for the people that didn't secure it the first time they had the chance. That's all we're, and we're going to do nothing else. The governors aren't going to do anything. State legislatures aren't going to do anything. We're not going to do anything. We're not going to do anything else. We're just going to do what we've done for a generation. Make a bunch of executives at Fox News who hate our guts, mind-numbingly rich, because we're grateful that they pushed the Overton window to the left at a much slower rate than the crazies on and the lunatic asylum on MSNBC and CNN do. We're going to do that, and we're going to vote Republican even harder while being convinced the entire time that our votes won't count. That's basically that's the battle plan, right? That's the plan.
Yes, and get informed about prostate issues from Caitlyn Jenner.
Yes, that's our plan. I'm totally fine voting for Trump again. I've said that from the beginning of this entire process, even while I was backing his primary opponent. But this idea that that's all we're going to do is just sit around and hope that either he can win or they'll let the guy win who didn't secure the border the first time. Well, Stevie, I know that. I cover this for a living. I know all these details. But he didn't get this done. That's one of the reasons why we're here. Do I think there's a much better chance you'll get something done than whoever the hell is running the country now? By a million. But that can't be our only plan, just to sit by here and passively vote. And not ask our governors to do anything, not ask our legislators to do anything. They had a gubernatorial primary in Texas in 2022, Todd. I had dinner last year with Don Huffines, one of his primary opponents. Don's a very successful Texan. His wife's probably listening right now, in fact. He could self-fund a campaign and did. One of the other challengers was the guy that used to be a member of Congress, Alan West, and the former head of the Texas Republican Party. These aren't nobodies that just jumped off a Reddit forum. That's my point. These aren't nobodies just jumped off a Reddit forum and Abbott's not good enough, so I'm going to primary him. These are people with name ID and or the ability to self-fund, to be relevant. Do you remember what percentage of the vote Greg Abbott got in that primary against those guys?
Shockingly high.
It was over 70%, and Trump endorsed him. The problem with having everything be about Trump, which is what we do, is that you're asking a very mercurial, let's say, person to bat 100%. No one's going to do that. No one is. You're asking way too much out of him. And so when he endorses a good person, we get him elected in a primary. When he doesn't, we can't. Like, we can't do like anything independent of him at all.
You want to hear something that's going to make you really upset?
Why not?
This is from Florida's Voice News. They've got the Florida primary today and local elections, I believe. With many local elections being held, the turnout situation has worsened for state Democrats as Election Day voting continues. Here are the splits for turnouts. Palm Beach, 59.5% Republican, 29% Democrat.
Wait, in Palm Beach?
Broward, 75% Republican, 18% Democrat. Pinellas, 76% Republican, 14% Democrat. Orange County. Orange County, 79% Republican, 15%
Aaron,
Democrat.
Don't you talk about Iowa evangelicals like that.
For people that maybe don't know and aren't old enough, if you're a millennial, a Gen Z listener, Palm Beach County is where the infamous Florida recount began. Because some little old lady retirees went on CNN and said they tried to vote for Al Gore and the machines told them they voted for Pat Buchanan instead. That's literally the whole origin of the story. And it began in Palm Beach County, Florida. Broward County, Florida is the place where they made the term hanging Chad famous, where a lot of the video that you saw from back in the day where people are like looking at ballots, is it punched all the way in? I don't know. Is it filled out? Okay. Was going on in Broward County, Florida. Aaron, can you just one more time, just those two counties, what was the primary turnout?
I lost the tweet here, but let me find it again.
And
this
those,
is the election day turnout.
Election day turnout in just those two counties. Do you have it? In just those two, Palm Beach and Broward.
Palm Beach, 59% R, 59.5% R to 29% D. Broward, 75% R to 18% D. That's beyond a shellacking. I mean, Republicans always beat Democrats on game day. Well, most places, but that's...
Not by 30 points in Palm Beach County, they don't, brother. I can promise you that, okay? This is why it's so frustrating. It doesn't have to be like this.
It did not.
It didn't have to be like this right now. It didn't. But... You gotta, you know, ride the horse that you have. You simply cannot allow everything to be about whether Trump stays on message today, who is the last person to talk to him, whether he even has time to focus on your issues while they're trying to steal his family fortune in New York. Okay? You just can't. That's not a successful path. And so we're going to fund the very federal government, Todd, that's leaving the border wide open. And, oh, by the way, gave us the Jack Smith probe that's trying to... So we claim that Jack Smith is being uniquely used to persecute Donald Trump, right? Those are our talking points, right? Right?
Mm-hmm.
And then we also claim that there's an invasion at our southern border, right?
Yeah.
Okay. The body that controls the allocation of funds that goes to either one of those two endeavors. Granted, it's the slimmest majorities, but who has it?
House.
And supposedly those are our people, right?
Supposedly.
And where is there any critical mass today as we continue to still go back and forth about bloodbath? Is there any critical mass today demanding Mike Johnson do his damn job and keep his oath of office?
Thomas Massie says absolutely not.
No, nothing. No critical mass at all. No critical mass to anything. As I sit here and see a poll where Trump was up by 4 points last month, the general election poll, and now he's down by two. And so we're just going to let the whole thing. You know what this is? I'm going to go back to what I said before, Todd. This is the culture war equivalent. What we are doing with Trump is the culture war equivalent of I'm taking my last check, going right to Vegas, betting it all on black, betting it all on seven, and then we'll just sit back and see if it pays off. There's like 230 days or something until the election. What are we going to do the next 230 days? Look at the polls! Look at the red wave! Okay, well, what am I going to do when I'm not looking? Look at the polls harder! Look at the red wave more! Okay, then. Watch your futures end. I don't know what else to tell you then. Hope it works out.
Yeah, well, when you're not talking to citizens most of the time. And that's the fundamental problem, whether we're talking about the border or anything else. What happened with Ketanji Jackson and her notion of the First Amendment, how it's kind of getting in this way of whole government, what we do. But the reason why it's persuasive is because we're not citizens. Citizens would not hear that. I'd be like, over my dead body. But if you're not citizens, you just want to be comfortable. And it goes to that alpha and omega point I said that Steve made. It's not that people aren't willing to allow drastic measures. Not at all. It's about which drastic measures allow them to be the most comfortable in their lives. Can I Netflix and chill? Will I have to say something mean about a
Hold on, I just got another email about Romans 13. Yeah. I'm kidding. Go finish your point. I'm sorry. Yeah.
So when she says, you know, it's one thing, you have a private house, and it's been found that there's a bomb in your house. And her whole argument, the government has to act. If you're saying, lying that there isn't a bomb in the house, that's a problem. If we can agree there is a bomb in the house, then do we act? Do we destroy private property so that more private property? But that's not the argument that we're having.
Actually, we let them destroy the house. We wait until election day so we can vote out the people destroying the house. And then, of course, the whole time believing that they rigged the election and we can't win it. That's our current
plan. The rigging is the key. Here's what she wants you to not have the opportunity to do. You're the government. You're saying there's a bomb in the house. Everybody, no, there's not. We're not agreeing there's a bomb. She doesn't want you to be even disagree. And here's why. Because if that premise is broken, and this is the really important point, whenever they see fit to say there's a bomb, they will, even if there isn't, or vice versa. Even if there really is a bomb, they'll say, no, there isn't. If it suits their interest, if it suits their comfort. So we can't, they don't want you to ever agree on actual reality. They want to define the terms of reality. Government. That's why she's fighting so hard for this. That's why she resents anybody who's not within her sphere, her clique, her power. It's why, without any sense of shame, when she was asked, can you define a woman? And she said, no. She resents that she would even have to. What if I don't want to? What if it does not give me power to be cornered like that? So she won't do it. She told you right with that question how she's going to be about everything else. And since you're not a citizen, right and left, she's going to win. No matter how dumb the things she says are, if you're laughing, you're really laughing at yourself.
I just want to clarify that the data from Florida that I read a few minutes ago, and I thought I said this, but maybe I didn't. There are certain counties that are holding local elections today. That's what I was referring to, not the presidential primary, which is only GOP. There are certain counties that are holding local elections.
Well, this actually makes that data even more impactful, actually. Now you're telling me that we're seeing in municipal elections in Florida red waves, that it's not just.
Grassroots.
Look what happened. Look what happened. The whole thing doesn't rely on Ron DeSantis. He did his job. All right. And then the rising tide lifts all boats. Yeah. So tomorrow, if it turns out Ron DeSantis steps on a rake tomorrow, turns out Ron DeSantis face plants and did something stupid and immoral in his life and is totally discredited, is there a system that will last in Florida beyond him and his first and last name and the presence of Ron DeSantis?
They're called citizens.
Yeah, that's called leadership, and it inspires citizenry. All right, back here with Hour 2 here on Blaze TV Radio and Podcast. Let us know what you think about what we think via the SteveDace.com inbox. You can take advantage of that, access it by emailing us, steve@stevedace.com. That's DEACE. You can like us on Facebook, MeWe, and Gab. Follow me at Steve Dace Show on Twitter, Gitter, Instagram, and TikTok. And then, of course, if you are a podcast listener, we appreciate you so much. Leave us a 5-star review if you haven't done this yet. Or you can also, and or, hit subscribe, or if you're on iTunes, like the majority of podcast listeners are currently, hit follow, and that way, every time we do a brand new episode, it'll show up in your feed every single time. And this part of the show brought to you by our friends at Constitution Wealth. They are the Patriot's choice in wealth management. Let me ask you something. Are you actively trying to avoid doing business with corporations that hate you? I know a lot of you are doing that when you can. Unfortunately, can't do that a lot. in our economy at the moment, but there are some places where you can. Why not apply the same thing to your investment portfolio, your retirement? And Constitution Wealth can help you to do that. They can help you to reduce your investments in things like ESG, DEI, and other woke scams and schemes that have overtaken much of the corporate sector in America. And that way, you're putting your most powerful tool, your money, to work, both in terms of being profitable and prophetic at the exact same time. So work with an advisor who shares your patriotic values. Why work with anyone else? Just go for example, if you have $250,000 or more of stock and bond and investments, and you'd like to reduce your exposure to woke companies, this is the place for you. Go to constitutionwealth.com/Steve. That's constitutionwealth.com/Steve. Again, head over to constitutionwealth.com/Steve. All right, let's get to this week's edition of Idolatry or Not. I have five items prepared for you guys today to discuss, Todd and Aaron, whether these things represent America's increasing sprint to idolatry as a people, or this is just, you know, everyday stuff. And, you know, within everyday stuff, people have disagreements. That's the natural order of things. Nothing to get all worked up about. Fair?
Yep.
Let's start with something that I have to tell you, this doesn't happen often, but I totally did not see this coming. All right. So an account I follow on X or Twitter, Retro News Now, pointed out, hey, this is the anniversary of when General Mills first introduced Hamburger Helper in 1971. Now, I have used the phrase white trash delicacy on this and every platform I'm a part of. How many times you guys heard me talk about that?
A lot.
Whether we're talking about Shamrock Shakes, Cadbury Mini Eggs, right? Okay. I mean, that's a compliment. All right. And I am the ugly American. I don't want to move to places where there aren't, you know, at least any form of a chance a pizza delivery guy can't reach you or get robbed. I mean, these are all tropes that I have discussed on various platforms and formats a million times, right?
And in many ways, in a clearly self-deprecating notion, yes. Like I am the joke.
Yeah, with a gleam in the eye.
Yes,
and
yes.
A tongue in the cheek. Correct.
Yes.
I posted this yesterday. I came in, did the show. And I was like, wow, there's a lot of people like worked up about this. But then we had to do the show. I then had to go read to, you know, a few dozen kindergartners in Pella, Iowa, which I greatly enjoyed, as I talked about at the top of the show. I get home so I can post our shows and some other things to get prepped for today's show. And my feeds, my mentions on Twitter are blown up. Hundreds upon hundreds of comments and posts about this, that this was elitist. And I'm like, I grew up on government cheese with a teenage mom who got carded every time she tried to buy cigarettes when she took me roller skating. I mean, what are we doing here? What is this? So, is this a misunderstanding? And here's why I'm asking about idolatry or not. This is, again, where the French Revolution and the Bolshevik Revolution are really two sides of the same coin. The Bolsheviks are like, only a group of elites, special people, can make decisions for everybody else and decide who divvies up the money and who gets the guns. And it's funny, at the end of Animal Farm, the pigs always decide that they're the ones that get both, right? And everybody else, you're at our mercy. The French Revolution is power to the people. Are the people basically good?
Nope. No.
No, they're not. And so I am seeing strains, and I'm of the opposite of the Bolshevik Revolution is the French Revolution. Where now, where we've gone from, if you disagree with me, you're a racist. That's the Bolshevik Revolution, right? The French Revolution is, if you disagree with me or offend me, you're an elitist. And so that's why I'm asking, is this idolatry or not? Or is it just maybe our show's grown and there's a lot of people that don't know who I am and they didn't know the context of this and it's a misunderstanding?
This reminds me, do you remember on Christmas Day, just this past year, you kicked off a holy war by doing something you do every single year in or around Christmas, which is tweeting or live tweeting, It's a Wonderful Life. Do you remember this?
And
You kicked off a holy war by live tweeting the quote, "Can you give me a good reason not to call on Mary?" And people thought that you had turned
George
Catholic.
Bailey is asked that by his mama.
This one is slightly different because of the responses that I'm white trash and I'm not sad about it. I'm white trash and I wear it on my sleeve. I mean, obviously, people don't listen to the show that see this, but I think there's another element of this as well. You have a large segment of your following on X, maybe, or a significant amount of your following that saw you not support Donald Trump during the primary, so they're trying to maybe justify.
So I'm automatically an elitist.
Yes.
I didn't support the billionaire who we had to vote for because he was so rich that he couldn't be bought off. And that's what made me the elitist.
I supported
the kid who grew up whose dad was an electrician.
That's what this is. That's what
in Ohio.
This is. Yeah.
Okay. So idolatry then, just not quite what I thought it was. Just a different strain of it is what you think.
Yeah.
All right. Todd, what do you think?
Yeah, we finally got to the point there at the end. It's also increasingly a heightened level of idolatry because not just the elitism, but like, so this is off color, this is mean. Well, again, I would venture that the vast majority of people complaining are in fact Trump voters. Your guy, no problem being off color, no problem being mean.
Mm-hmm.
Like all the time. So,
made a brand out of it, actually.
Yeah, I don't.
Wrote it all the way to the White House.
This is where you really. You can't.
Dude ate taco bowls from Taco Bell on Cinco de Mayo with a sombrero on. Yeah. Okay?
So I don't believe suddenly.
Damn
like,
funny, by the way, but come on.
You guys, if you're a Trump voter and you're now on the fainting couch with this, get out of here.
Yeah, I'm just going to tell you right now, put this marker down. What's the date today? March 20th?
19th.
Put this marker down right now here as we get close to the first day of spring. I'm not signing up for, because I'm working class, I'm automatically holy and righteous any more than I'm signing up for, because I'm wealthy with 7 master's degrees, I'm smarter and better than others. Not signing up for that. Either one. They're both idolatries. I'm going to push back on them both. There are just there might be per capita more rich people in hell than poor. It is easier for a camel to pass through an eye of a needle, after all, right? Okay. But the idea that I'm with the poor's. I worked an hourly wage, Jesus. So my sins are atoned. No. There's plenty of room in hell for you too. So nope. Not joining your, you're not different than the globalists. You're on the same team. You guys just believe, and you have you're coming from a different direction because of my human culture subculture group. I am better than others or deserving of something that others are not. No, you're not. I don't even take Christian businesses on the show and promote them if their product sucks. I won't do it. You're owed nothing. Nothing. You're not owed even the. That's why it's called grace. Who was it? Who wasn't when Jesus walked out of the tomb, stood there at the tomb as the stone was rolled away, and said, "You know what? Thank you, God. It was about time you delivered. I had that one coming. I was starting to lose hope." Who was it that had that kind of claim? No. Anybody?
No.
Not a soul. You're owed nothing, and you'll enjoy it. Nothing. So take everything good you have, whether you're smart, stupid, rich or poor, fat or skinny, white, black or pansexual, vegan. Take every good thing you have and praise God for it, because you deserve none of them. None. Everything good is from the grace of God. Nothing more, nothing less. Well, I worked for this. Who gave you the hands? Who gave you the brain? Who gave you the skills? Who gave you the knowledge? Did you come up with that on your own? You're owed nothing. Squat.
I mean, there are, it's undeniably true in my mind. There are vast swaths of people. Let's just look at the Rust Belt alone over the past generation and a half who have been victimized and forgotten. Look at the people of East Palestine. That's one example of that. That being said, they are victims, yes, Does that victim status make them better? No.
No.
That's the language of the communist left.
That's correct.
The intersectionality totem pole is how we got to this moment in our nation's history. The solution is not retribution. The solution is not a different type of intersectionality totem pole. The solution is getting back to meritocracy and back to any of the number of things that we were promised we would get back to multiple times by basically every GOP candidate at every level in my lifetime.
What's the difference between Robespierre and Stalin? One spoke French, the other Russian, and one had more time. That's it. No other difference. How was the church under Robespierre, Todd? Flourishing?
No.
How was the church under Stalin? Flourishing?
No.
No. Bunch of people that didn't belong in prison under Robespierre? Yeah. How about under Stalin? Yeah?
Sure.
No difference. No difference between your vot populi. In fact, vot populi is the message often of the Marxists. We're the workers' party. You're not any different if that's where you're coming from. And I'll push back on you both. I'm not joining either of your cults. Not happening. All right, let's get to my Patriots.
One more thing. Go ahead. Steve, you seem to say everything and everyone is in a cult except for your little circle. What do you say to those people? Because I get that in my mentions a lot.
Well, that may be true. The question, I may say that. The question is it true? Ultimately, every movement that isn't ultimately predicated on the word of God is a cult. Every single one. Because even if it doesn't intend to be when it starts, if it doesn't have that plumb line, it'll eventually become about groupthink, will it not?
Mm-hmm.
Will
mm-hmm.
it eventually become about some individual and their agency and their mission or a small group of individuals and oligarchy? It's unavoidable because of the condition of human nature. So either it will have as the word of God as its plumb line and measure of accountability, or it is or eventually will become a cult, period. Unavoidable. Because everything we touch eventually deteriorates, minus the word and spirit of God, because we're sinners. We can't help ourselves.
Good.
Is that a good answer?
Yep.
Hey, before we get to more, let's talk about our friends at My Patriot Supply. You can't pinpoint it, but you can't deny it either. It just seems like maybe I better get ready. Yep. My Patriot Supply has been doing that since 2008. They've been helping millions of American families prepare for an uncertain future. Many of them choose three-month emergency food kits with nearly two dozen food and drink varieties, so you'll never get bored. All right, and you'll be fully fueled. 2,000 plus calories a day. All three meals, even drinks and snacks, are a part of these kits as well. They are inside ultra-durable four-layer packaging, so they're good for up to 25 years with storage, just to give you the peace of mind to know if it goes down, we're at least going to be able to eat. PrepareWithDace.com, you'll get each kit for $200 off if you go there. PrepareWithDace.com, and you'll get shipping fast and free. Shipping fast and free, $200 off each kit at preparewithdace.com. Again, that's preparewithdace.com. All right, next on Idolatry or Not is this clip.
I'd love to hear about, like, what are you specifically tackling for Easter right now? Like, okay, this is going to be a bigger service for most churches. What are some of the things that you have to get your, you know, ducks in a row, as it were, in respect to Easter?
For us, the most important thing on Easter is inviting people to church. Easter and Christmas are the only two Sundays of the year that are actually wrapped around a particular passage in the Bible, right? Most of our other Sundays are whatever the pastor wants to preach on, you know, any particular thing or whatever. But Easter and Christmas are both around particular biblical events. And so this particular biblical event of Easter is tied directly to our mission. And so that's so important to us. And so when I think about how I'm going to talk about Easter, I'm thinking about talking to people far from God. Because that's the thing that matters most to us. And so, just to like give you just like a teeny bit of a glimpse, I'm talking all the way from people who have been in our church for years, and I want them to invite people to church, all the way to people who've never heard of our church before and trying to get them to come to church, right? People who are unchurched, you might say. And so how do I talk to those two people are really different. But I'm putting a lot of my focus, energy, time, resources toward what I would call the cold audience, as people far from God. And so I'm not going to say the word Calvary. I'm not going to say the word resurrection. I'm not going to say the blood of Jesus, right? I'm not going to say any of these words that make someone feel like an outsider. This is really important. An important guiding principle for how we develop language is anyone can be a part of our church. It might not be for everyone. Everyone might not like it, but anyone can come. You don't have to understand what we're, you know, any fancy language. There's not any prerequisite to be able to come here. And so when we're thinking about such a like steeped in tradition holiday like Easter, and how we talk to someone who's not steeped in that tradition and how we get them to connect to it and come to it, that's really important to us.
That is the digital content director for Elevation Church, and also that clip courtesy of Protestia on Twitter, who also furnished the clip that we're going to use in overtime today. They're a great follow.
If you don't know who Elevation Church is, one of the biggest churches in the country, pretty decent chance if you're in an evangelical megachurch, at least one of the songs you sang last Sunday is from them. Stephen Furtick, I think that's the pastor's name there. I think that's who that guy is. Okay. So this is kind of, you know, your current version of a church that feeds and inspires lots of the programming you see at others as a Saddleback, as a Willow Creek has done in the past. All right. So I saw this, guys, and my question was, how did those first century Jewish Christians, under constant assault from both non-Messianic Jews and their families who wanted to shun them for believing Yeshua was Messiah, and then the Roman government who was out trying to kill them all the time, how did they, because when I read like their correspondence letters, these epistles they wrote to each other and encouraged each other what to do and what to say to spread the message, don't those letters like include every single term she says they don't want to use? So can you explain to me, how did these Messianic Jews in the first century, under constant assault on both internally within their own religion and externally from the Roman government, how were they able to spread the message without this brilliant messaging consultation from the digital director at Elevation Church? Is that idolatry or not, Todd?
So just to be clear, this church you talk about, it isn't Joel Osteen.
I think it would claim it's not that, but there would certainly be some similarities, I think, based on what I have seen.
At the very least, this is too smart by half. And I think that gets to your point, Steve. I can't be absolutely sure about this without knowing more about the church and these people, other than the fact that both of them... did you speed up the tape on those two speaking at all?
No.
See, the fact that they speak that rapid fire, that...
It might be sped up. I don't know.
Oh, that was a tell to me, but my goodness. I'm going to give them an Easter, Christmas benefit of the doubt, but I wouldn't be shocked in the least if it... knowing more about the people in particular and the church in particular, if it is. I think it's just, it's at the very least, it's just trying to be too clever about something that I don't think the Lord ultimately gives you an example. I mean, he sits down with people in circumstances that obviously make the church leaders of the time very, very uncomfortable. And they ask questions about that. This is seem weird. And Jesus talks about how he goes about talking to people while the bridegroom is with you versus when he's gone. It's as likely that this goes down a silly road as it goes down anything substantive, I guess, is what I'm saying. I'm not just going to put the idle hammer down on it, though.
Okay. What about you, Aaron?
Oh, I am. Do you avoid those words in church services as well? I mean, we're not even talking, she didn't even mention sin, okay? I mean, we can maybe talk about, you know, having a dispensation for the turn or burn messages when you're really going to be the most exposed to your community. My question is, what the hell is the point of your Easter and Christmas services if there's no substance there? Resurrection, blood of Jesus. What was the other term that she used that they don't want to talk about? Calvary.
Yeah.
What is the purpose? She just said these holidays, Easter, Christmas, are birthed directly out of scripture passages.
She's marketing. She's not evangelizing.
Jesus doesn't need marketing. Either the Holy Spirit is or it is not. These people, marketing is not the Holy Spirit, he gets us. It never has been. I said a few months ago, maybe just a couple of months ago on the show, the only degrees that they're handing out at the University of Hell is marketing degrees, because Satan is a hell of a marketer. He's a hell of a deceiver. That's what the other side does. Jesus doesn't need marketing. The Holy Spirit is the power that moves people's hearts.
Amen. Great segue to talk about Tommy John, because this underwear spot will have more theology than what you just heard from the woman at Elevation Church. All right. This is just simply the greatest underwear I've ever had. And they gave me a big script, a lot of great stuff. Breathable, lightweight, moisture wicking, all that great stuff. I'll just tell you flat out, it's the best underwear I've ever had. It's the only underwear I bought. How long have I been on the show? Like 3 or 4 years?
Yeah.
It's the only underwear I have ever gone back and bought ever since I tried it. That's how good it is. Absolutely fantastic, comfortable. This is why it has thousands of 5-star reviews. They have a line for the ladies as well. You can't beat it. If you've not tried it before, get 20% off your first order right now at TommyJohn.com/Steve. That's TommyJohn.com/Steve. You can get 20% off your first order for a limited time right now. Absolute best underwear you've ever bought. TommyJohn.com/Steve. 20% off your first order at TommyJohn.com/Steve. All right, let's continue on. Let's do these last three kind of rapid fire. All right, next. A study, this is from Scientific American. They put out this tweet yesterday, Scientific American. A study of more than 100 birthing parents showed that pregnancy and birth caused changes in brain circuits that may be involved in empathy and bonding with the child. Aaron, is this tweet idolatry or not?
Yes, because it's even more so based on the community note that this story had that you couldn't see there. The community note says that, yes, Scientific American reported on this study using this term, but the study itself actually uses the term woman, mother.
Means they
like
woke
that.
Edited it.
They edited it. Yeah. So, yes, it absolutely is idolatry.
That's an easy one. Of course it is. Yes.
Yeah. But it still requires, I think, to be pointed out, because this is one of the leading scientific journals in the United States of America. They edited that woke language in. When we talk about captured institutions, that's what we're talking about.
Even when they're discussing actual scientific
Correct.
Data.
They can't...
To define what happens to a woman. Yep. And the only thing a woman... The most uniquely thing a woman can do. And it's not good enough.
This, you know, while we're getting emails about Romans 13... And how passive am I still allowed to be? Spirit of the age, man, is relentless. The yeah. spirit of the age has gone like full door knocking Baptist, man. Yeah. Okay? I mean, full door knocking Baptist. The spirit of the age does not care, man.
You've got a playing game to watch, yep. though, tonight, so you're busy.
All right, next, this tweet from Lee, the great Lee Strobel, in my view. He's quoting from the Pew Research, which, you know, I've said before, one of the few private polling firms on cultural trends that I think actually do good work. Look at this trend line going back 2002. So we're halfway into a generation, over 20 years. 8 out of 10 Americans saying religion losing its influence in public life. 8 out of 10. In 2002, that number was 52%. So in 20 years, that number has gone up about 30 points. Todd, idolatry or not?
Well, is that happening because of idolatry? Yes.
You get to answer that. Yeah.
Yes. I mean, that's simple math. I mean, there's a lot of particulars involved, but at the end of the day, we've fashioned something to worship other than God. So there you have it.
Yeah, it's interesting that a majority of people have a positive view of religion, but a vast majority of people, 8 in 10, think that it's waning in its influence. So that is the result of idolatry, for sure.
Good enough to have a positive review of religion if sound and fury signifying nothing if you don't act on it. What? Who cares if you have a positive view of religion? What does that even mean? That's religion, broadly speaking. Then I say, well, there is a right religion. Or, oh, hold on a second. It's meaningless. I don't care about your stupid emotion on this. Act. Fruit.
So I'm going to call an audible and skip the last one because I think that there's a couple of points on this one that I think we need to make after I remind you about our friends over at New Founding. You know, we were just talking about, you know, investing your retirement away from companies that do the woke agenda, DEI and ESG and all that stuff. Well, how about building a parallel economy with companies that don't? New Founding is trying to invest in these kinds of companies through their venture fund. The companies they invest in, they're defined by a simple question. Does the country we want to live in need the company that this person is building? If the answer is yes, they do what they can to support. If not, they move on. And you can join them in that effort. Venture capital, venture investing, of course, not for everyone. But if you're a serious accredited investor who wants to see a more hopeful future for the country, go to newfounding.com/venture fund today and apply to be an investor. Again, that's newfounding.com/venture fund, and you can join their venture fund today at newfounding.com/venture fund. All right. What percentage of people are saying this in the Pew survey? Because much of American religion looks more like Elevation Church's digital director than Jonathan Edwards. You see what I'm saying? Like if the three of us were called by Pew and asked, what's your current view, positive or negative, on religion's impact on American life? We all three might answer negative.
Yeah.
Now our differences may be, our reasons might be different and more nuanced than why a lot of other people are. But what percentage of those are people answering no because that's what they want to see and they're excited to mm-hmm. see that? And then how, meaning they're godless. And then how many people are doing so because they're like, what in the Sam Hill is this? Right. Okay. And if this is what it is, we're probably better off without it. Thoughts?
Well, that's why it's so important, and that's what I was railing on, that what 57% still say they have a positive
view of religion overall. Yeah.
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 Actually, you know what? That's actually the key right there.
Yeah.
In our culture, if the church was functioning just on a, if it just started functioning as it should be on a dime, that number should be like 15%.
Yeah.
So, you know, see what I mean? If it was confrontational,
yes,
people would have a negative.
So the numbers would be inverted. The amount of people that saw it as a positive influence would be higher, but the amount of people who had a personal opinion, there'd be more conviction. Is that what you're saying?
Maybe. I would say if people had a positive view of religion would be lower if the church were more confrontational.
Right.
But
right.
It's not confrontational, so it's a little fuzzy teddy bear over in the corner.
But you would collectively see its influence in the culture would be better,
yes,
and so that number may be higher.
Yes.
Okay. What do you think of that, Todd?
Well, I'm obviously more on Aaron's wavelength. I find that 57%, considering what we're dealing with this culture, deeply depressing. I don't believe religion is a bad thing. I believe Christians who talk about, I don't believe in organized religion, I would think are lazy, if not stupid.
Most of the time when they say that, they are.
Yeah.
I agree. Yeah.
But organized religion is absolutely failing right now because of cowardice. We should not have that in a high number right there.
I mean, how many people in this audience, if they're in a spiritual fight for their marriage, their community, their culture, their kids, think that the first place they ought to go is to the local church that they belong to? Exactly. I know so many of you are disheartened to see that our country has forgotten the importance of citizenship. And if you're wondering how a strong sense of citizenship could be revived, check out what our friends over at Hillsdale College are doing right now. They've produced one of their many free online courses, but one of their new ones is American Citizenship and Its Decline, taught by venerable historian Victor Davis Hanson himself. The course traces the history of citizenship and explains how it is undermined in America by open borders, identity politics, the administrative state, globalization, and more. Americans taking this course will gain a deeper insight about the connection between citizenship and freedom and insight they can share with family members, friends, neighbors. Hillsdale's free online courses, they're an important component of Hillsdale's mission to reach and teach increasing millions of people on behalf of liberty and the American way of life. So if you want to do something to pass on our cultural heritage, sign up today for this free online course, American Citizenship and Its Decline, at daceforhillsdale.com. That's daceforhillsdale.com. Again, daceforhillsdale.com. Well, it was a best-selling book, and now it is a documentary that I had a chance to watch a couple of weeks ago with my small group, in fact. And we were all very impacted by it and discussed it quite a bit amongst ourselves. It's called Letter to the American Church, and the man behind both the documentary and the book joins us now, Eric Metaxas. It is good to have you on the show, Eric. Welcome to The Blaze, brother. How are you?
Great to be with you. You're a voice for truth. It's a joy to know you're out there, my friend.
Same here to you. I appreciate it as always. So the genesis of this, of why you decided to tell this story, you get into it at the beginning, kind of the preamble to the documentary, setting the stage, the parallel between Germany in the 1930s and the church and what we see today. So let's start there with those parallels. As someone who wrote what a lot of people consider to be maybe the definitive work on Dietrich Bonhoeffer, so this era is right in your wheelhouse. What are the things that you're concerned that we're following along the same line of thought with, Eric?
Well, if somebody asks, what is the story of Bonhoeffer ultimately about? It's not just a biography. In other words, what is the story about? Why do we care about Dietrich Bonhoeffer? And it's, in a nutshell, he was someone who knew, as the evil of the Nazis was rising, he knew that God was calling the church to stand against the evil. And so he was like a prophetic voice to the church to say, hey, church, this is your job. This is not someone else's job. It's not Romans 13. We're going to bow to the government. There is evil, and God is calling us to speak against it, to be a voice against it, to work against it, to stand against it, to risk our lives against it. And many in the church at that time said, no, we just want to do church. We're more theologically focused. We don't want to be political. We don't want to be controversial. And Bonhoeffer's trying to say, excuse me, that's not biblical. That is religious nonsense. That is fear. That is theological confusion. God calls his church to stand against evil. And the German church was unable, mostly, not all, but mostly, to see that they needed to unite and to stand boldly and strongly, even if it meant looking political because they were facing the evil of the Nazis. They failed to do that, and the result, as we know, was a nightmare. You hardly can think of nightmares like it in history, with millions murdered, and you know that's where it ended up. That is where the American church is today. Early on, when the Nazis didn't see what was coming, if they had known what was ahead, many more would have spoken up. They would have risked their lives. But they said, you know, it's not our job. We're going to see how it goes. There are many in the American church today who are effectively saying, you know what? We don't think we need to be the ones. Let those hotheads, you know, fight or risk losing their job or risk this or that. We're just going to do church. And when it struck me that the parallels were so dramatic, that exactly the excuses given by the German Christians, Christian leaders, in the early 30s, are the same excuses being given by innumerable Christian leaders today, I thought, this can't be happening, but it is happening. And the more I looked at it, the more obvious it struck me. And so I don't say this lightly, Steve. I believe God called me to write this book. There was this fire. I've never felt anything like it. I've never written a book like it that's just aimed at Christians, not at everybody, strictly to those who say, I'm a Christian. To say the parallels are horrifying, and we are asleep precisely as the German church was asleep. So the point of the book and the point of the new documentary is, can we wake up enough Christians before it is too late? That is the charge, I believe, that God is putting in front of his church today.
I mentioned this during lockdowns a few years ago, Eric. I watched a series on Netflix that was about 10 years old. That was primarily about the Nazis' rise to power. And it was done by the BBC. And the series opens up with a look at what Germany was like at the turn of the 20th century. You see very early versions of motion pictures, and it looks like, you know, something out of a Jules Verne futuristic novel. They are well advanced in terms of public transportation.
Right.
It's kind of a benevolent autocracy under the Kaiser. It's the wealthiest nation on earth. It has the largest, wealthiest middle class, working class on earth. It has the most powerful military on earth. And it really is, at the turn of the 20th century, it really is the greatest nation in the world at that point in time. And within 40 years of when they showed this video, which was from about 1905, 1906, within 40 years, that exact same culture would plunge the world into not one, but two of the worst wars in human history. Where the death tolls were beyond catastrophic in both cases. The first one, just kind of your traditional, you know, powerful elites fighting over, you know, who's going to be the most powerful. And then the second one, just, you know, frankly, a demonic descent into the mouth of madness under the Nazis. But the point I got watching this in just one generation, when a culture lets go of the rope, it goes fast.
Yeah.
When I watched your documentary, I sense that you're concerned that we are letting go of the rope. And when that happens, it goes fast.
We let go of the rope. That's why it's going so fast. The last 3 years have been a level of madness accelerating like none of us in our lifetimes. We've never, ever seen anything like it. I mean, we always knew things are bad. Things are trending in the wrong direction. And then suddenly it just speeds up. We have sheer lunacy happening in America. I mean, you don't need to be a Christian to see it. That's the horror, is many Christians are blind. Many people who aren't Christians, they see what's going on. They see their kids are being sexualized, that they're having insane ideas shoved down their throats, that they're more than two sexes. Who decided that 5 minutes ago? Who decided that men could suddenly become women, that women could become men? And that, by the way, if you dissent, if you think that's not a good idea, if you think that's preposterous, you can't talk about it. This is madness. The idea of an open border, the idea of defund the police, the idea of anywhere you look, you see madness. The government overreach, I mean, the idea that the FBI is breaking down the doors of people that I know, friends of mine, arresting them, taking them. You just say, this is demonic. This is America, you would think 100 years in the future, mm-hmm. maybe. Mm-hmm. It's happening now. And to me, the horror is that many in the church are still saying, you know what, we don't want to be political. We just want to do evangelism. We just want to do our nice churches. And you think, are you kidding? That's what the German churches said. And look how God judged them. Look what he did in that nation. It's an unbelievable thing. To me, the only good news is Romans 8:28. These horrible things, God is using them, I believe, to wake up those who can still be wakened up. In other words, that if things are this bad, there are people every day looking around thinking, wait a minute. I didn't realize. I better speak up. I better do something. I better vote. How many Christians didn't vote in the last election or in the previous election? You think, we have turned our nation over to crazy people, to demonic forces, and it's anywhere you look. This is not one issue or two issues. It's a host of issues. We see globalism trying to crush our national sovereignty, trying to impose some kind of like World Health Organization order on Americans. And you have many, most in the Democratic Party and a number in the Republican Party just saying, you know, fine, that's fine with us. It's the job of the church to stand up. And I wrote the book for the church, and the documentary wasn't my idea to make a film, but some people saw me speaking about it. They said, this needs to be a film. They have made, as you've seen, a really tremendous film. It's not just a documentary. It's just well done, but it's designed to motivate people, to making them understand this is the biblical case for taking action, for getting political if necessary, because sometimes it is necessary, and we have the freedom in this nation to express ourselves and to express God's will in the public sphere. So it's a real it couldn't be more urgent. The time could not be more short. We're going to lose everything if the church doesn't rise up, probably within this year. It's not, we don't have a five-year plan. This is one of those things where we're in a war. And I say it's the third existential crisis in our history. The first is the revolution. Second is the Civil War. This is the third existential crisis. We can lose this nation. And if the world loses America, Lincoln called us the last best hope of earth. There's no, you know, America waiting in the wings to take our place. There's China and globalism and enslavement to an order that is not, by any means going to be friendly to Christians.
Amen. Where can people, since you brought up the movie again, where can they watch it? I want to make sure we get that out there. How can they see the documentary?
It's just the title, lettertotheamericanchurch.com. Anybody who goes to lettertotheamericanchurch.com can see the film there. They can buy the book. They can buy a DVD if they prefer to get a DVD. And if you go to lettertotheamericanchurch.com, you can see a list of free screenings, because I feel so strongly about this message that we are making this free, 100% free to any church that wants to do a screening at your church. We are offering this free to churches. And my question is, if you're going to a church that is asleep, that is not interested in this stuff, my question is, why are you interested in going to that church? Because the hour is this late. So we're just saying it's free to any church that wants to do it. lettertotheamericanchurch.com.
lettertotheamericanchurch.com is where you want to go to see that movie right now, and it's also where your church can sign up to do a screening of the film, and I would recommend it, having seen it. And, you know, right before, we got about 5 minutes here, right before we brought you on, we played a clip from the digital director at Elevation Church, one of the most influential evangelical churches in America right now in Charlotte, North Carolina. And she was talking about their plans for Easter coming up. They're not going to use terms like the blood, Calvary, resurrection, because those will just drive people. Basically, just it's the embodiment and the epitome of everything you and I were just discussing. I know this is a good segue, too, because I know to another book I know you just released, Religionless Christianity, God's Answer to Evil, that is available right now if you want to go and get that book. But this is, you know, it's taken different forms over the years. It used to be from the Saddlebacks and the Willow Creeks. You know, then it was the Bethels and the Hillsongs. Now it's the Elevations. This idea that God requires marketing, not vessels, all right, not willing vessels, but a human touch. That God's cake can't be relevant unless humans have the frosting that'll make people, the spoonful of sugar that'll help the medicine to go down. And we're so obsessed with this that we've literally lost, while trying to be relevant, we've lost almost all relevance we have in this culture whatsoever.
Well, look, I'm here to tell you that the only places that invite, all the churches that invite me to speak, they're the ones that didn't shut down during COVID, that have been heroic, suing Governor Newsom or standing up bravely in other ways, understanding that they need to speak about stuff. And if people say, oh, you're a Christian nationalist, oh, you're being political, all you care about power, they have the wisdom to say, excuse me, shut up. We care about human beings. And to keep silent in the face of evil, you call it what you want. We're advocating for God's values because the Lord commands us to love our neighbors. This is how we love our neighbors, by talking about the vaccine, by talking about voter fraud, by talking about transgender, by talking about everything that is of concern to human beings. Those churches are growing. So the churches that are trying to be relevant by avoiding all of this stuff and by trying to do church, they are drying up. They're becoming increasingly desperate. It's pathetic. Look, it's like Jesus cursed the fig tree, did not bear fruit. He cursed it. These churches have been cursed. And I say to anybody, if you're going to a church like that, for the sake of your soul, get out of that church. Find a church that is being brave. I was just in Denver. The church there is actually called Brave Church. All around the country, there are churches like this. They're being heroic. They're not afraid to talk about all these different things. Letter to the American Church is the first book. Religionless Christianity is the sequel, which will be out in a couple of weeks. But it's the message of, are we speaking the truth boldly without religious frippery, without nonsense, without, we're being clear, because human beings in this world where evil is rising, many people who are not Christians, they're suddenly interested in, if you're talking about what concerns me and my kids, if you actually care about that, you're not just doing nice church, you're not just having happy church, you actually care about the struggle we're going through, you're being a voice, you're giving us guidance. Those churches are blowing up, growing like crazy. I mentioned Brave Church in Denver, but all the churches that have invited me that are doing big screenings of this, they all have the same story. Our numbers have tripled since the COVID shutdown because we didn't shut down. So people are leaving the pseudo-relevant churches, like you mentioned, Elevate, Elevation, whatever. All those churches are becoming increasingly desperate, doing more marketing and more nonsense. People who are actually looking for truth are going to these other churches. And it's a very dramatic shift in America. So that, Steve, gives me hope for this nation.
Great stuff, Eric. Good to see you. Congratulations on the film and another book as well. It's good to have you on the program, brother. We'll do it again. All right, take care.
God bless you. Thank you.
Yep, same to you. All right, as we close it out, gentlemen, thoughts on the conversation we just had with Eric Metaxas.
Well, it was perfectly providential that with his book and how it dovetails with the other church that we mentioned in the previous segment. Like, I was trying to be generous and a certain level of benefit of the doubt in my analysis there. But at the end of the day, once they're sat down, it's the solid food or nothing. There might be some sleight of hand to get them in the door, but if you don't bring the real deal once they're sitting down, there's very harsh treatment for you in scriptures for what's coming down the road for you.
Yeah, and on a positive note, just anecdotally, I can confirm what Eric was just talking about, that about the churches that are courageous are the ones that are growing. And that's true of my church. During COVID, it was a little bit different situation in Iowa with our governor, but there were some churches that were cautious beyond the time when the governor said, hey, you can meet in person again. We have brought in a ton of new people that were just disaffected from those types of it was really a great sifting, at least amongst the church, mm-hmm. in my view. So that is a positive development. The consolidation of true believers into true churches, that is a positive development.
You guys remember I went and spoke at a Calvary Chapel church in Chattanooga, yeah. back in 22, I think it was. And great community, great people, really enjoyed it. And their story was that after coming out of COVID, they were like, hey, man, this is burning. We got to step up. And so they start doing the stuff that Metaxas was just talking about. Church just empties out. Three times more people actually start coming in. And people drive in from all over the state of Tennessee now to go to this church because of exactly, Aaron, what you just said. Yeah, they lost a lot of their original membership, but they tripled in membership with people to take their place because they were addressing things that mattered to people. Romans 8:28.